This is CliffCentral.com.
So, classification in Paralympics, right? Now, we chatted about this yesterday, and now we're going to chat to Ross Tucker.
All right, he's on the line. Ben, do you want to talk to him?
Yeah, well, he is the foremost man to talk about all things sport, doping, cheating, and performance.
I'm going to get him on the line right now.
Very good, Gareth.
Dr. Ross Tucker. He's no stranger to controversy. He is on the line. Where is he in the world at the moment?
I think he's still in Cape Town.
Hey, Ross, how are you?
How's it, Gareth? Good, thanks.
Good. Man. Where in the world are you today?
I'm in Cape Town.
Aha. All right. Now, Ross, Ben wants to talk to you about a bunch of stuff. Have you recovered from your fights on Twitter and on social media with everybody who had a problem with your opinions on Costa Semenya, and they had a problem with science, and they expected you to kowtow to political correctness? Have you finished all those fights, or are they ongoing?
Yeah, now that the Olympics are over, and there are far fewer experts all of a sudden. Strange, that. Yeah.
In other words, they've moved on because they're not getting the attention they got before.
Partly that, yeah, I reckon.
All right. So, Ross, Ben wants to talk to you about the Paralympics.
Yeah, Ross, now obviously Paralympics starts tomorrow, and something that we found quite interesting this week is that there's this classification cheating going on, and there's been quite a lot of interesting stories around this because we think Paralympics, we don't quite see it as the drug-fueled frenzy that other sports are. So what are these things about? How do you cheat in classification?
Yeah, so first of all, you're right about the Paralympics. I think in part because of who competes in it and partly because of the immaturity of the sport when you think that it was only 1988 that the modern Paralympic movement began. I think there is more trust of it, you know, less cynicism around it. But there is this issue around classification. And I mean, the fundamental problem here is that you're trying to take people who have impairments and you're trying to group them together as accurately as possible so that they compete against people who are similarly impaired. But when you're dealing with these conditions, and the most obvious example of this is cerebral palsy, mm-hmm. you don't have people who've got the same impairments. It's not like you've got it or you don't. So all the category A's go together, all the B's, all the C's. They exist as a spectrum. So it is difficult to classify people accurately because some people are very mildly impaired and others are not. And so the moment that happens, you've got a loophole. And people who want to win medals, whether it's on an individual level or whether it is at a national level, they will try and get athletes classified at a level lower than what they should be. So in other words, they want to take athlete who's got a mild impairment and have them compete in a category with people who've got, say, a moderate or a severe impairment. And so they try and bypass or cheat the classification system so that they can enter athletes where they'll be strongest and win medals, you know?
Now, has this been a relatively recent thing,
how
or is the press only just getting onto this now?
No, this has existed for a while, and it's always going to exist in part not by accident, but just because there are challenges. So I'll give you one example is that in track athletics, there are four categories for people who have cerebral palsy and who run. There are other categories for cerebral palsy where they compete in wheelchairs, but these are the...
Just remind us, which one's the cerebral palsy? I get so confused sometimes. I call people by the wrong thing and they get annoyed with me. So what is the CP?
Cerebral palsy is a condition where you've got some damage to an area of the brain. Mm-hmm. Usually happens in birth or before birth. And what it does is it affects your ability to control your muscles. So when you look at these athletes run, you'll see oftentimes one half of their body looks like it's tense and tight and the other half functions normally.
Surely that affects the steering. I mean, the guard of their lane and stuff, right?
Yeah, it is difficult. And so when they run the bends, you can see it. It's visually possible to see. And so the category that's most affected is called T35. And then 36, 37, 38 gets less and less affected. So when you watch the Paralympics in the next few days, have a look for the difference between those. The 35s are much slower. And you can also see just in the way that they run that they struggle. So you'll see, I don't want to get into the major technical stuff, but they have issues with coordination, with balance, with controlling something called muscle tone. So in other words, the muscle is always contracted or looks always contracted. Mm-hmm. So those are the four categories. Now, I remember coached a Paralympic athlete in 2004, and he was classified then as a T38. So it was the highest functioning category, or least impaired. So no worries for us.
Yeah.
But even back then, I came across a number of athletes who were just desperate to be classified a level lower than they were. And I remember there's one.
They want to be thought of as more disabled, so that they can get an easier race.
Exactly. And I mean, there was one case in particular where this athlete, young guy, still a teenager, is just absolutely desperate to be classified one level lower, because he'd been classified as a T38.
Yeah.
And he wasn't quite good enough to make it to the Paralympics in that category. If he'd been a T37, he'd have been on the plane. And he was just desperate, you know. It was the only way that he was going to make the Olympics. And he wanted ways to cheat the test. Because they have people called classifiers who then assess these individuals. And they look at the symptoms, things that like I've just mentioned, how their muscle tone, their muscle strength, coordination, balance. They look at how they run. They try and objectively classify them. It's not, don't get me wrong, it's not like they look at them and they say, oh, that looks like a T37, done, next.
Right.
It's a little more systematic and objective than that. I don't want to downplay that. But this guy wanted to know how he could cheat that process and be, not cheat, but how the process could be in a way kinder to him, to classify him down.
That sounds bizarre. That sounds completely ridiculous, actually.
It also sounds like something that's like, it's very difficult to kind of manage. I mean, we know that the biggest sort of like dispute we've seen in Paralympics when Oscar Pistorius suddenly lost and said the other guy's blades were too long or something along those lines. I mean, is this something that we can ever kind of guard against, or is this going to be ongoing now?
They try to, Ben. So every single sport has got its own classification process, and then the governing body is called the IPC, and they've got their own classification principles and policy documents, and those are not insubstantial. I mean, the classification concept document is 80-odd pages, and they've got another 45 on something, so people can go on the internet and find these and have a look exactly what they do. So they've tried to formalize it. There's quite a lot of research coming out that looks at whether you can improve it and make it more objective. We did some of that here in Cape Town as a PhD student that I supervised over the last 5 or 6 years, got a PhD looking at muscle function and fatigue in people with cerebral palsy. So there are attempts to make it work a little better, but there are always going to be cases where you'll watch the Paralympics in the next few weeks and you'll see two athletes running and you'll say, that didn't seem like a fair race to me. You know, now that is in part because of classification, and sometimes you're also just seeing an exceptional athlete. I'll tell you the one event where you see it quite clearly is swimming, because the interesting thing is that in swimming, they don't group cerebral palsied athletes together and wheelchair athletes together and visually impaired athletes together. They actually mix the impairment based on how much it affects the function. So you actually have different impairments. So
you could have a guy with like one leg, and then you could have a guy with no legs.
Exactly, and you could have them competing against someone who's short, what they call short stature, competing
against
someone
like a little person.
Exactly. Yep. And then you'll have someone else who's got conditions like ataxia, where they can't control the muscle, and you'll have these four athletes in one race.
That sounds like a perfect TV show.
And you'll see these athletes, and you'll think, but how is it that the athlete in lane five is competing against the athlete in lane four? They've got completely different. And the reason is that in swimming, as I say, they actually assess all the body structures, so they've got this checklist, and they use a point system. And based on that point system, you get put into a category, and they actually mix the impairments. So it becomes
wow.
You know, so one of the things about the Paralympics,
you got me excited about the Paralympics with that. I swear I'll be watching the swimming.
Yeah, I would encourage people to watch it, you know, and enjoy it for obviously the stories and the inspiration and so on that it provides, and also some outstanding athletes. But you'll also watch it, and as I say, you'll often think, wow, did I just see the athlete in lane four? He was completely different to the athlete in lane five. How is it possible that they ran together?
I'm excited. All right, Ross, thanks for talking to us this morning.
Thanks, yeah, no worries. Listening. Thanks, guys.
Very, very interesting.
Awesome. Very good. There we go. Now, if you haven't watched the Paralympics before, guarantee you're going to want to watch it now. I'm excited.
This is CliffCentral.com.